Good morning. Great to see you. Carol's here.
Yeah.
Very sweet. Last week we had an interesting and lively practice circle. And I don't remember exactly how it started, but it had to do with the words boundless and empty, boundlessness and emptiness. And just a quick refresher, we were talking about what might be the better word to use in the Heart Sutra. And someone mentioned that they have difficulty with the word emptiness because it seems nihilistic. And so I think, so we talked about it in terms of culture, translations, language that it's translated from, history, a whole variety of different factors go into how boundlessness and how emptiness are expressed. And actually, just as a place to start, oh no, I'm sorry, I left out one thing. One of the things about the words that we use, they're supposed to help us understand the various aspects of our practice. And so if I would say that if somehow the word emptiness is an obstacle, then let it go. And boundlessness is helpful. It's an easier way to understand what we're talking about, then use boundless. A lot of times, if we just trust our gut, we'll know which is which. But in this conversation, I felt that emptiness might be being misunderstood. You know, if we say somebody he's an empty whatever, right? Empty implying that he has no substance. Or the glass is empty. It's sort of a negative expression. And this goes on where in our culture and the use of the word empty, most of the time is empty, is a negative. So I thought it would be a good idea to do the best I could to explain the essence of emptiness. Now to do that, it's necessary to also talk about form. Now, if I take this sheet of paper, it's just occurred to me, this would be form, and this would be emptiness. Right?
What would be emptiness? I'm sorry.
This is the form, and this is emptiness. So this is all our thoughts, ideas, beliefs, projections, emotions. Right? This is the form of our life. And this other side, which I think we're generally less familiar with, is emptiness. It's empty because it's free of all these ideas, opinions, beliefs, etc. Right? So this is another way of experiencing reality. So there's a saying in Zen that there's a difference between the finger pointing at the moon and the moon itself. So this is the problem with talking about something like emptiness. I'm going to use words and concepts to do my best to explain or give a sense of it. But that talk is limited by the words that I use. And so there's a difference between an understanding of emptiness. So, you know, the finger pointing at the moon is the explanation, right? And it's pointing at something. And emptiness is an experience that is beyond words. So form and emptiness are different ways of experiencing reality. And what is form? Form is the world of phenomenon, spirituality, teachings, individuals, ideas. And emptiness is the oneness of life. And that oneness comes about if we experience the world without a mind filled with all this stuff, all these opinions, all these things that create distinctions, right? If we create a distinction, we create a separation. So the oneness of life means life as it is, without any distinctions, without any projections, again, ideas, meanings. Now what happens is sometimes we get confused by the distinctions, and these distinctions cause us to feel separate from each other and from life itself. We each have beliefs, we each have ideas, and we each have life experiences. And these shape who we think we are and how we see the world. And many times, and which is the heart of the problem, I think, we cling to these beliefs, ideas, and life experiences. And so we don't see reality clearly. We only see it from one particular perspective. So if we cling to that perspective, life will be distorted, creating a separation. And we will mistake our beliefs of reality. We will mistake our beliefs with reality. Things as they are, or things as I think they are. Now, there's a saying, I don't know where it comes from, but Zen masters say, don't seek the truth, just drop your opinions. So this is actually a story, I don't remember it for real or in detail, but it's a story that takes place in New York, and it's a story of this fellow who, on his way to work, passes a soup kitchen and a shelter for homeless. And every day his attention is captured by this one particular guy. And so what happens after seeing him on a daily basis, he starts to have certain feelings and certain thoughts about him. And thoughts like, well, this guy's probably a drug addict or poorly educated, a drain on society. And you know what? He should get a job. And he may feel disgust or maybe even fear. And it turns out that this guy's name is Bernie. And he has a PhD and was an aeronautical engineer. And also, he is a Zen master and the creator of a number of homeless programs in Brooklyn and the Bronx. So his way of thinking is form, right? He's dealing with forms in a particular way, experiencing them in a particular way. And he's saying that Bernie Glassman, who's the Bernie, he's seeing him as a homeless guy who he's sort of looking down his nose at, creating a separation. So this separation that gets created invariably leads to suffering. So we have minds that are crammed with thoughts, opinions, ideas, and also the belief that we are an unquestioned separate self. Right? Because of the way we perceive the world, because of all these thoughts we have in our mind, we see everything as separate. And that's the truth. right? There is no doubt about that. I am Carl. I am not Court. I am not Carol. I am not Chris. I am. I have all these things which, all these distinctions with, which make me the unique Carl that I am. So that's the trouble that all these ideas that I have crammed in my head can create. And these separations. If, you know, I think Court is less than me, well, that relationship that I have may cause suffering for Court, but also for myself, because I'm missing a huge part of life by being self-centered. So our practice, the practice of Zen, stills our mind and allowing ourselves to experience life very differently. And the mind becomes silent through this practice and is no longer producing ideas, beliefs, opinions. We could say that the mind is empty. Empty of what? It's empty of thinking. The mind is still, it's silent. And in emptiness and in this silence, there is no thinking which creates separation, because the distinctions are silent. And in that place where of silence and where all the distinctions that my mind create are silence, that is when I experience the oneness of everything. Because there are no distinctions, no ideas, none of that stuff to create separation. When that's silent, I have a very different experience of life. So it's the interrelationship of things, including you and me. Now, the nature of this experience is that it's freeing and it's joyful. You know, it is such a relief to have another way to experience life other than the way that I'm used to. And with no separation, and you know this, the koan about Joshu, who sees a monk and he asks him where he's going, and the monk said, "I don't know." And Joshu answered, "Not knowing is most intimate." So when the mind is still like this, basically there is no knowing. And because there is no knowing, we become intimate with everything. We don't have this, we don't make distinctions. It's no longer this and that. It's one, it's just one. And in the moment of being just one, there's no thoughts about just one. That comes later, you know, for these kind of talks. And often the emotion that arises is love. Love for everything and everyone. Now, remember that form and emptiness are two sides of the same paper. They're not separate. They're just two sides of the same thing. So if you recall from the Heart Sutra, as I just showed you, emptiness, form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. Form is emptiness. And emptiness is form. So when we have this experience, this insight of oneness, this realization, we don't stop there. The next part of the process is to integrate this experience into our everyday life. To experience this side, to integrate this side with this side. So they become one. They don't function in opposition to each other. The guy who was walking to work, who saw this homeless guy every day, had had this experience and integrated into his everyday life. He would not have experienced that homeless guy, that Bernie guy, as something other than himself. You know, in a sense, he would be intimate with that guy. And because of that integration, they would be one. And as one, he would feel compassion for this fellow who is in a soup kitchen, with some nights not a place to live. That's because the oneness is integrated into thinking. Right? It helps the thinking. It sort of balances the thinking. Right? And we have to think. We have to think to function. But it's, can we include in that thinking this alternate experience of life? Now, in koan study, there are these initial koans. I talked about mu, and these are the koans that we work with to help us, lead us to this experience that I'm talking about, this experience of silence where we empty ourselves of this side, and we experience this side. And koans help us experience that process. But there are also many, many koans that help us integrate the experience of emptiness, the experience of oneness, into form. So form and emptiness are not in opposition to each other. They're different ways of relating to life. And they work best when they work together, when we have no separation between the two. Piang Yun wrote a poem, but anyway, it's titled, Without Name and Form. Well versed in the Buddha way, I go the non-way, without abandoning my ordinary person's affairs, right? That's exactly form and emptiness right there. I go the non-way, the empty way, without abandoning an ordinary person's affairs, without abandoning the way of seeing things through the eyes of form. So, well versed in the Buddha way, I go the non-way, without abandoning my ordinary person's affairs, the conditioned and the name, the named and form. All are flowers in the sky, nameless and formless. I leave birth and death. The conditioned way, the this and that, are all flowers in the sky, are all empty, without name and without form. So I leave birth and death, this and that. And I think that's a beautiful expression of what I've been talking about. Now, just to end, most of us have experienced emptiness in our life. We've had a taste of it. And sometimes we're doing the dishes, and we're just doing the dishes, just picking up the dish, wiping it with the sponge, rinsing it off, putting it in the rack, but totally just doing that. There's no frame of reference about washing the dishes is different than putting food back in the refrigerator. And that is emptiness, just that simple activity. It's free from thinking. It's free from creating me and the dishes and the dishwasher. Listening to a friend, bearing witness to a friend where we have emptied our mind, right? We're in a place of not knowing. We've emptied our mind of thoughts. And we're just sitting there bearing witness in that bearing witness, we become one with our friend, the person to whom we are bearing witness. Right? There's not two people having a conversation. It's two people functioning as one, right? The form is two people. The emptiness is the functioning as one. And if you remember, functioning as one leads normally to compassion. When it stops being two people, usually it's compassion that arises. One final one that came to me was I was watching a guy holding a baby, and I had to imagine that that father and that baby were one. There was no sense of, well, I'm the father and this baby is the son. It was one, and that's the experience of emptiness. The emptiness of distinctions which create separation. So for me personally, and this isn't to say that somebody else can't experience it differently, I don't think that Zen is nihilistic. I think that it really is a beautiful experience, a different way of experiencing life, which changes our life, creates a whole new path that we walk down. Especially if we're able to integrate the form and the emptiness. So I just wanted to share, you know, my own experiences, my own thoughts about form and emptiness. Now, if we're going to have a practice circle, I'm happy to answer any questions about this and share my perspective on it or how I came to see this in a particular way. So thank you for listening.